Right, a U-turn by FSG, and all of a sudden there will be no rise in ticket prices at Liverpool Football Club. No £77 ticket. The highest season ticket for the next couple of seasons will be £869. There's a freeze in season ticket prices for two seasons, and of course it's been heavily covered, but that U-turn, did it come quickly or not? Let's talk to a man who wrote an excellent piece the other day after the initial walkout by fans, and again writing in the Telegraph this morning, Chris Basker. Morning to you, Chris.
Hi, Steve.
Expected this quickly, this sort of U-turn or not?
I think the indications from early on Sunday were that this was going to happen, and it was just a case of how far they would go. And you know, I think viewers, they have an inkling. Certainly, the £77 ticket was going to go very quickly, but it was just a case then of how many more concessions would be making. I think there was a lot of pleasant surprise that, you know, it was a two-year freeze, and, you know, certainly the £9 tickets as well, you know, hugely extended that. So, yeah, I think it was it was a very welcome and necessary response.
Fan power doesn't always work, does it? But yeah. Why in this case was it so potent?
Well, I think that it's very easy, and you know, we can all fall into this trap, especially now when you've been a journalist writing about football, not actually sat on the cop for many years now. You know, a lot of supporters can be seen to latch onto causes, and you can easily brush, oh, they're just radicals, they're revolutionaries, you know, and that was not the case with this. This was 10,000 people, and this was your genuine, you know, I mean, they're all genuine. It's kind of like trying to isolate one group from another. They are all. But, I mean, this was like football as a whole saying, no, enough is enough. £8 billion over the next 3 years. This does not make economic sense. You cannot tell us that even now you're pleading poverty and you've got to put ticket prices up. It just rank unfairness more than anything else. But, you know, and I think, you know, it's just like the end of the tether moment. And it was a seminal moment at Anfield. I think a lot of us walked in wondering, well, how much support is going to be really this? Is it going to be up 500,000 people? When that whistle by the fans basically went on the 77 minutes and you felt that the whole main stand was standing up, you just looked around and it was goosebumps. It was like, oh my God, something quite sad and yet almost now in retrospect magical is happening here. And I think every fan who was involved in that should feel incredibly proud today.
So you think it was sort of the aligning of the fact that this football money is coming in together with Liverpool's price rise? Because you could look at Arsenal or Chelsea and say, oh, you know, Arsenal charge £97. Why have their fans never taken it to this stage? Have they got a new breed of fans? Is it a different sort of generation down there?
I think with Liverpool, it's, you know, Liverpool's fans are already mobilised, aren't they? Because they had to go through the whole rancid regime of Hicks and Gillette. So there was already good fan groups who were already well organised. And so they could enact something like this very quickly. Probably a bit tricky for other supporters because, you know, I think it was the first idea was mooted on Thursday and you know, by Saturday it's executed so brilliantly. I'm not sure whether other clubs could do it as well as Liverpool. You know, we always wonder, is Liverpool so different as a football club? Well, I think at moments like this, you just have to say it is. It is different as a football club. And I think a lot of other fans will be looking at Liverpool fans with a certain amount of respect and maybe even envy, you know, what they've achieved here.
If you look at the statement, and obviously John W. Henry, Tom Werner and Mike Gordon, they've done a good thing. But they say they've never taken a penny out of the football club as yet and invested an awful lot. Yeah. If these initial prices were to have gone ahead, so there's obviously a lot of money there that they're not now going to make.
Yeah.
Is anything at the football club going to suffer because of that money that isn't made? Is that money that would have gone to sign-ins? Do you perceive that as money that would have just been profit? Or what was that money?
Well, the fact of the matter is that, you know, they're right in what they say, you know, and this is where there is some sympathy for FSG because they haven't taken money out of the club. You know, they did give an interest-free loan. I mean, the stadium issue is what brought down the David Moyes regime. He couldn't afford to do what, you know, FSG have done and give the club this money, you know, interest-free. They've had to go to a bank and they've been high interest. It brought down Hicks and Gillette because he basically said he did have the money and he lied. So FSG has done something really that, you know, should be applauded, given this interest-free loan to redevelop the main stand. It's all about match day revenues. But the argument from the supporters is a valid one. The resources that you have had, are you using them well enough anyway? You know, you're buying all these players, you're paying all these agents. You need to be a bit more savvy the way you're running the club. And also, of course, there's the commercial side of it. If you're talking about £2 million difference, which supporters were pointing out, go and get your commercial team to go and get another sponsor and fill that gap, you know. Get the sponsorship money and ring-fence that and use that to help supporters. There are different ways of doing it. I mean, Liverpool can argue, justifiably, why should they be leading the cavalry charge to reform football? Mm. But Liverpool is a different club. It markets itself on being a different club. It exploits the romance of the cop as a different club. So you can't have it both ways. You can't sort of, you know, champion the supporters as, you know, part of what to make Liverpool different and then just forget about them because of the business model. And I think that's what a lot of supporters groups are latching on to, and fair play to them because they've been proven correct.
Is this a seminal moment for football as a whole?
I'd like to think so. I mean, you can bang your head against the brick. You know, the piece I wrote the other day, trying to broaden this out because it's not just a Liverpool issue. I mean, look at some of the things that are going on in football. The PFA, fantastic organisation for what it does. It gets £20 million a year from broadcast revenue. The chief executive pays himself £3.4 million a year. That's a scandal. That's a scandal. And you will not get any player or ex-player or anyone in football teams speaking out against that. I mean, it's almost like, you know, that mafia sounds. What's going on there? How can you justify that? You know, agents' fees, £150 million going out of the game last year in agents' fees. Not one club will tell you which agent they paid. It's disgusting. So they don't help themselves.
There's quite a big piece by Brian Reid on that today. He says, where's the morality in PFA bosses Taylor's £3.6 million he puts a year when fans can't afford to go to the match?
Absolutely. But why? It's only like journalists who seem to be wanting to, you know, you can't just write the same column every day. It's up to somebody in football to be brave enough and say, now, you need to reform. We know the PFA does great things, but the contribution to the £20 million, £22 million a year it makes, it's £20 million from broadcast and £500,000 from players. The Premier League players are earning over £1 billion between them. They're paying £150 a year subs. Nurses are paying more than that. We don't like to bring the old nurses versus footballer things, but even the players themselves must think, oh, come on, you know, £150 a year. I mean, in baseball, I was looking at it, the baseball union, the players pay $70 a day. $70 a day. To pay support their union, and the footballers on £200,000 a week are paying £150 a year.
And it just
Gordon Taylor can give himself £3.4 million a year from the broadcast revenue, and nobody's saying anything about it. It's incredible stuff. I'd like to stop the fans to do a, you know, some kind of demonstration outside PFA, and some of the agents' offices, and say, come on, what's your contribution to all of this?
It shows how many sort of underlying monetary problems there are in so many different areas of the game.
Yeah, when the £8 billion deal is announced, eyes are lighting up all around, you know, the football world. We know who the agents are who are, you know, even the other day, you know, this guy Payet at West Ham, great player, what's he doing? Oh, I can't fancy £130,000 a week now. So it all comes from the same pot. It just goes in a cycle. The TV broadcasting revenue goes up. The players say, and the agents, oh, we'll get a bit more money, we'll get heftier contracts. Clubs go, well, we're not making any money now, let's put the ticket fees up. Sky want to bit more, so they'll put the subscription for the TV up, so your fans will get it both ways, and we just go along because we, you know, it's almost emotional. I read some most ridiculous piece I've ever read in a sports page yesterday. Some guy comparing football clubs to supermarkets. Yeah, because you get taken to a Tesco when you're 7 years old and you're loyal forever, aren't you? You know, I'll never go to Sainsbury's again. You know, it's preposterous that kind of attitude exists. And, that's part of the broader football problem.
Yeah, and of course, the financial pressure only gets worse and worse when you hear the likes of China coming into the market and clubs over there then offering ludicrous money to players. Your Teixeira, who was a Liverpool target, your Ramirez. All of a sudden, there's another market in there for players to say, well, actually, I can get my cash there as well.
Well, exactly, and they use that. They'll use that to their advantage. But I think that's where the clubs have got to be brave enough, and they've got to say, well, OK, fine, you want to go off to China, all the best. Most players really want to play Champions League football. You know, they're ambitious. You know, I don't want to tarnish all players with the PFA thing because that's the way the organisation's run. But, you know, a lot of these players, they do want to win Premier League if they're born in this country, or they want to play Champions League. So you're not going to get any Chinese clubs getting allowed into the Champions League in the near future. So that's what they want. That's what the motivation is. You know, I kind of think, go on then. God, I don't think Harry Kane at Spurs wants to go and play in Chinese football. I think Steven Gerrard, when he was at his peak at Liverpool, thought, oh, you know what, China looks quite a good prospect. If these guys want to go over there, well, there's a word to them. You know, you want to be the mercenary, go. We can have a bit of a wholesome game over here with players you actually want to play.
And fans who want to watch the match properly. Just a footnote on, I mean, I think the story will rumble on and grow in many ways, because obviously I think this is a Premier League-wide problem. There's a great deal of credit to those who are involved in organising the walkout and the show of strength, and almost the demonstration that sort of that union feeling, Spartan Cop 1906 and Spirit of Shankly, can actually achieve some positive things there, Chris.
Definitely. There's no getting away from that. As I say, when it was first all mooted, I think it was easier for them. I put myself in this category to wonder, is this really the right way to go? Is this really going to be successful? And then, you know, I think at that moment, in the 77 minutes, you just looked around and thought, yeah, they got this absolutely spot on. And, you know, when you spoke to fans after the game and the level of feeling towards this, they caught the mood absolutely brilliantly. And I think there were probably one or two at Liverpool who misjudged it quite spectacularly. And they may have had a bit of explaining to do to their bosses over in Boston for the last 72 hours as well. So, fair play. And I think it's turned, yeah, as I say, from what seemed like quite a sad and depressing development into something that I think is quite heartwarming, actually.
Thanks for your time, Chris. Brilliant to chat with you.
Right, no problem. Okay.
Chris Bascombe from the Daily Telegraph there.